Welcome to episode 114 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live February 15, 2019. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user set of life, where we discuss a topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure, and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. Today, Sarah Lean, a cloud solution architect from Microsoft, joins Scott and Ben to talk about ways to govern your Azure environments. Good morning, Scott. How are you on this? It's another cloudy Friday. It's always cloudy on Fridays when we record.
It's always cloudy on Fridays because we're going to talk about cloudy things.
Well, then it would be cloudy every day of the week.
It just might be for some of us.
Yes. Anyways, we have done a last few episodes have been us, and we got someone to come on and chat with us today who we were talking before has a much cooler accent than we do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm excited. We have Sarah, and Sarah is a cloud solution architect with Microsoft. So I'm going to let Sarah go ahead and introduce herself, and then we'll go ahead and get into our conversation.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, I'm a cloud solution architect at Microsoft. I specialize in talking to customers about data center migrations. So that's where I go in and help them and try and understand that process and discuss things that they're trying to do. I've been in the IT industry for about 13 years now, though. Started off as a first-level engineer and kind of worked my way up that career ladder. So, yeah, I've been using cloud for about 2 years now. So still relatively new in terms of other people's experience, but loving the journey and, you know, it's a great place to be in at the moment.
Yeah, it's not a bad place to be. there's all sorts of interesting stuff going on there. I tend to do quite a bit with Microsoft CSAs as well, just across my customers working for a learning partner. We go out and work pretty closely with that group. And we're always seeing all the nice, fun, new things that customers are doing, and especially the fun new ways that they're potentially trying to onboard to the cloud and break their environments along the way.
Yes.
you mean people break their cloud environments? I thought the cloud was durable and never went down and you couldn't ever do anything wrong in the cloud.
It's not so much about that. And I'm a little jaded working for a training partner or a learning partner and being on that side of the fence. But there's lots of things that you don't have to be an expert in, but you do have to know. You know, we've talked a lot about fundamentals and going back to the beginning and let's do the crawl, walk, run thing. And most customers that I interact with, they're trying to run on day one or just walk really fast. You know, they're trying to do a good power walk and they're forgetting some things that come up along the way. So we've got to put a foundation down and then put up walls and then maybe add windows and doors and think about all these things as we build this house and ultimately build these larger estates. And you figure, hey, maybe we do Azure, maybe we do AWS, maybe we do GCP. And how do we align all these things and make it work? It's just a ton of stuff going on. And then if you're a customer of any size, doesn't matter if you're little itty bitty or the largest enterprise, you just get really hung up in the, I need to be an expert in these things. And maybe I do need to sit down and write a 400 page functional spec before I even open up the Azure portal and click a button, because we're just so fearful of all the things that are going to happen. And, you know, I find a little bit of education goes a long way. Let's teach you about things like Advisor and Security Center and put your mind at ease. And let's really start out with a crawl, right? You're not going to put everything up there on day one. Maybe right. We talk about networking. And that leads us into a conversation about something like naming conventions. Not naming conventions for all 500 Azure resources that you're not going to use all 500 of, but for the handful or two handfuls that we're going to put up on day one. And then let's talk about how we can model those environments and make them repeatable and, you know, nice and structured as we move forward.
Right. So, and one of those, before you even start talking about that, and this is one thing you are passionate about, Sarah, one thing you've done a lot of is, why should I even choose the cloud, or why should I even go to Azure versus keeping it all on-prem? So what in your experience, Sarah, has been some of that? Why cloud? Why Azure? Why even learn about this stuff?
I think it's just such a flexible space to work in. When I was in a server engineer role, some of the challenges I came across can easily be solved in the cloud by a click of a button, by a move of a slider. When I was doing that server engineer piece, when we'd run out of space on our build to add any extra memory, and we'd have to try and get a purchase order for 20 grand worth of extra tin, and that would take weeks and that would slow down the business and cause some issues. Now you can log on to Azure and move a wee slider or click a button, and that problem solved. Obviously, it still costs quite a bit, but you know, you can instantly solve that problem. And I think that flexibility, just in that use case, is amazing and allows us not to stress about, you know, financials and building business cases and stuff like that. We can actually be techies and we can solve things and we can move our businesses a lot quicker. We've all probably heard the story about the web retailers whose website crashes during like Black Fridays or Christmas sales. If you move to the cloud, that kind of goes away if you do it right. You know, using scale up and scale out kind of technologies, you can deal with that demand and you don't have to have thousands of racks of kit sitting in your data center doing nothing for the rest of the year. So those kind of use cases are great points for moving to the cloud. And I think as we grow as a world, you know, as a whole IT, we are moving towards the cloud. Lots of services are going software as a service and platform as a service and stuff, you know, using this meeting technology that I'm probably sure is backed by cloud technology, and we probably don't even know that. Do you know what I mean? So the world's all changing, so we need to kind of try and keep up with it as techies.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. So usually we try and answer kind of why cloud up front or make some of those decisions. And there's all sorts of pitfalls there for customers. I was having a chat with one of the students I was teaching with last week, and he worked for a consultancy and he was working with a customer who had said, we're going to go with the best of breed solution in a given area, whether it was for infrastructure as a service or platform or software as a service, and best of breed, best cost for us. And they had never really done any additional rationalization around what that meant outside of cost. So maybe they looked at CRM solutions and they said, Salesforce is going to be the best thing for us, so we'll go get Salesforce. And then maybe they needed an automation tool or some type of enterprise integration, and they did a runoff and they decided on MuleSoft over here. And then they decided on one type of virtual machine to go into AWS. And then another service, maybe like SQL, just based on their on-premises licensing, to go to Azure. And they just had this big mishmash of things. And you know, you try and take a step back and you say, okay, so cool. We did a little bit of a cost analysis. Really, what's your total cost there? How are we going to drive into these investments you've made and where it actually makes sense to host all these workloads and what that looks like? Because just because we can, doesn't mean we should. Is it actually cheaper for us in the long run to spend a little bit more money and put all their stuff in the same place? Maybe it makes sense to keep it in different places. But they had missed that fundamental step because cost was the primary driver to get them there. And it's not a great place to start.
Absolutely. You know, there's a training element to moving to the cloud. You need to teach your staff some of the new terminology and how to use all of this. So spreading hybrid cloud or multiple cloud is great. But then, like you say, there's that additional cost and you need to train them up in Azure, AWS, Salesforce, GCP, whatever it may be. And that is a hidden cost almost that we need to try and avoid customers going to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another one of those costs, and it's one I've hit myself when I try to use different cloud services and all of a sudden I want them to talk to each other, is there can also be that cost of the integration of how much work do you have to do to get Salesforce to talk to Azure, to talk to AWS, to talk to Google, versus when you do something like put it all in Azure or put it all in whatever cloud solution, that whole integration point tends to be a lot, there's not as much cost involved in integrating everything and getting it all to tie together. The other thing I like that you really said was the whole scaling concept when you start looking at the price of, if I have this really busy time period, I need to build on-premises hardware to scale or to support the maximum load I'm going to get, versus Azure, you don't have to build out that maximum infrastructure. You just scale it up as you need it. I was actually just working on something for someone today where I was looking at the monthly cost of all the VMs in Azure. And it's like, you know what? That monthly cost is $400 a month. Maybe that sounds like a lot, but realistically, they only need this hardware for a week, maybe a week and a half, and you start breaking that down, it's like, you know what? I'm only going to turn this on. I'm only going to use it for that week I need it. And it's like $58 for the week, or if you just need it for a day or two, it's like $12 a day. To actually build that out on-prem is going to be a lot more expensive. And you really have to look at how much is this hardware going to be used, not the total estimated cost, but how much am I actually going to use this, turn it off, turn it on, scale up, scale down, as you need those resources in the cloud.
Absolutely. That's great when you break down, you know, a lot of our services in Azure is per month, and that can be scary to a lot of customers. But like you say, if you're only going to be using it for a day, a week, that cost comes right down, and that's all that that cost is. It's not that initial per month cost. So yeah, there's lots of different factors you need to look at when you're choosing the cloud. So yeah.
As the leading global brand for enabling the Microsoft Cloud, Obsgility's global Microsoft MVP and multi-certified cloud solutions architect team has authored over 20 mock courses, the Microsoft Pressbook Implementing Azure Solutions 70-533, and numerous Microsoft Cloud Practice Playbooks for Microsoft partners. And for a limited time, you can get your team certified in the most exciting cloud business today with a 25% discount off instructor-led training prep courses for Azure and Microsoft 365. Visit obsgility.com/Microsoft Cloud to learn more. That's OPSGILITY.com/Microsoft Cloud.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about, we'll pretend that everybody's kind of figured out how to get over to the cloud. They made it over that hump. One of the things that you're pretty passionate about is governance and helping customers how to understand these environments once they have stood them up. If they do a migration, it's not just migrate. They need to be able to operationalize those workloads and run them on the other side in what I'll call a sane manner. Why don't we talk a little bit about what that looks like in Azure and what some of the tools are that are going to be available to customers, like things that they can go and look at, and maybe even some of the new improvements that have been made there.
There's a great tool set within Azure. And what I love about them as well is a lot of them are free. We offer a lot of them for free. So again, I talk to customers about the governance thing and I'm like, well, let's have a look at them and let's use them because they're free. So one of my favorites is Azure Cost Management, and it kind of does what it says on the tin. So it helps you monitor and manage your costs, and you can set up budgets, you can set up alerts, you can do reporting, you can drill down to the very lowest degree of what your spend is and where you're spending that and track every penny. And that's a great tool. And it's not just available for the IT department, and it doesn't need to be the IT department that owns that tool. We can leverage out our RBAC rules and give it to the finance department to control that. We can give it to project managers so that they understand where their projects are spending money and how that's affecting. So that's a great tool. And as I say, it's free to manage your Azure kind of spend. If you're measuring third parties cloud spend, there is a cost involved, but for Azure, it's free. So why not leverage that technology? And it's on by default. So at the minute you spin up your Azure subscription, cost management's tracking your spend. So it's a great tool, and a lot of people are starting to leverage that and use that to understand where they're spending and where they can optimize. So I like that one. And it's lots of pretty graphs as well. So I like that one. The other one I love is Azure Advisor. Again, another free tool. It doesn't just do cost management, so you can have, it gives you recommendations around your costs, your high availability, so are your resources highly available, and if not, how can you leverage your services on Azure to try and be highly available? It gives you security information, so again, are things locked down? Are they not locked down? How can you better improve that security? And lastly, performance, about how to actually make those services work better and harder for you without necessarily spending more money.
We should probably break down a few of those things because there's been a lot going on in that space. So just to take a step back real quick to cost management, you mentioned a couple different lenses in there. And I think it's important to call out for everybody that there's kind of two sides there because you opened up with cost management and pretty graphs. And then at the end, there was a little bit of, oh, and if you want to manage other clouds or view costs for other clouds, there's this other thing. There's a tool out there, like you said, called Azure Cost Management. It's cost management and billing just in the Azure portal. Super nice, super nifty. And very recently, just went to general availability for customers on enterprise agreement or for enterprise enrollments. And now they're working towards kind of bringing some of those other improvements into other non-enterprise enrollments as well. So things like MSDN accounts or just regular paygos, all that good kind of stuff. That was all based on really data and visualizations, yeah, that came out of Cloudin, which still exists, which is Azure Cost Management by Cloudin. The naming conventions are getting really great these days. But customers do have access to both of those tools. So there's a couple different places to go and kind of look at things. Outside of the graphs, I think one of the really nice things about cost management as it exists today in the Azure portal was some of the richer budgeting or quotas that they threw in there and the alerting mechanisms around them. So in the past, we might have to go into the EA portal for that enterprise enrollment and say, let's do a budget at the department level. Well, what if your department had 16 subscriptions or n number of accounts underneath it, and you really wanted to have budgets for each? It was, you know, we had to kind of go back and figure it out and see what was going on. And now we can set those alerts and thresholds per subscription and even have multiple alert groups or kind of multiple stages to that. You know, we might want finance to know when we're hitting 75% of spend, and we really might need the IT department, the operations department to know when we're hitting 85 or 90 so that they can go back and think about maybe shutting some things off to save some money for the remainder of whatever that billing period is.
It's a powerful tool. Yeah, definitely. And so it can also call out some optimization. So, you know, if your VMs are running too big, you can resize them and see the cost savings that you can and do there as well. So it's a powerful, powerful tool.
And that's part of Azure Advisor, which is, I think, one of the things people miss with that one. It's one of the very few things that can be tweaked in Advisor is as a customer, you can go in and actually tweak that CPU rule between, I think it's between 5 and 20% CPU utilization. Mm-hmm. To figure out where those underutilized compute instances are, and then maybe go back and think about doing a resize on them. It's always an interesting conversation when you talk things like infrastructure as a service and virtual machines, and it tends to be one of the more costly components of the cloud. It's just CPU and RAM cost money. It's eating up electricity. It's doing all these other things. There's some really meaningful ways to save yourself significant spend every month if you really go in and optimize maybe a little bit more than you would have in your on-premises environments.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think what we'll probably see in the future is Azure Advisor and Azure Cost Management kind of melding into one and being a seamless kind of tool for managing your cost and optimizing them as well. So
yeah, hopefully they'll bring over some of those optimization rules that currently exist in Cloudin. And I don't know how that'll look at the end of the day or what the roadmap is there, because some of those are kind of premium features of Cloudin right now because it does have multiple tiers and other things going on. But at the end of the day, there are tools out there for customers, and they can sit down even on day one and start to understand some of this as they're running up workloads. And they still have access to tools like the pricing calculator to try and figure out or at least get a sense up front of what some of that is going to look like for them as they transition over to that operational model, that operational expenditure model.
Going into this, for me, because I'm a little bit newer to some of this, and I'm just looking at some of the cost analysis and budgets now. So the cost analysis, I know, right? There's just so much to keep up with. So cost analysis, budgets, the advisor, all built right within Azure, are just for Azure. And then, like we had said, there's some other integration looking at third parties. That's when you're going to jump over to that Cloudin service that you can get to from Azure, but Cloudin is more Azure and other third parties, and then cost analysis, budgets, Advisor is just Azure resources.
Yeah, so Azure Advisor is just for your Azure resources. Azure Cost Management will allow you to do AWS. I think we've got a private preview running at the moment, so hopefully at some point that'll go GA as well. But yeah, you're right. Right at the moment, if you want to manage Azure, AWS, and GCP costs. CloudIn is probably the tool to pick because it can do all three at the moment for you.
Yeah, and you might have access. There's a ton of other tools out there as well. So CloudIn is not the only way to do this. The operational advantage of something like CloudIn, if you're just an Azure customer, there is that free tier for you. So we're talking kind of to tools that you just have out of the box. If you're already doing something else, or you're coming over from some other cloud, and let's say you use Cloudability, you're still going to be able to use that and bring it over, but you might want to take a look at the free stuff and see what that can get you, because part of your cost optimization strategy is maybe taking a look at your cost optimization tooling as well.
Yep. Right, and everybody always likes free.
Free is good as long as you can figure out kind of what's free and what's in that tier and what it looks like as it potentially moves around on you.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit. So are there any other tools you like, Sarah? I know we talked about kind of some of the cost and the advisor stuff. Are there other tools to just help prevent Azure from your resources, just kind of from becoming that Wild West of all of a sudden everybody's creating all these different resources. You don't know what's out there. You don't know who's created what. How do you kind of manage Azure as a whole, maybe even going beyond the cost, but just those resources in general? Are there other tools around that, recommendations you have?
Yeah, so I love Azure Policy. Again, it's a free tool, completely free, and it allows you to lock down some of those things. So as we know, in Azure, you can have a VM that costs you £4 a month, and you could probably have a VM that costs £800 a month. So as an organization, you probably want to lock down some of those higher end ones so you can put an Azure policy in place that allows your guys to spin up VMs within a price range and stops the larger ones spinning up. And that's just one use case. You've got other use cases for Azure policy, like say you don't want to deploy within different regions. So lots of organizations have compliance and they want to keep their data in their own country or in their own region. So you can put an Azure policy in place that says only deploy services in the UK, for example. And if somebody went into the Azure portal or through PowerShell or an ARM template and tried to deploy something in Australia, Azure policy would go, nope, not allowed. And it's a great way of keeping your guys up to date with your corporate policies, because they can't do it, you know. And if someone's missed something in a bit of documentation, they're not going to break compliance because Azure policy stops them. So it's great from that point of view. And it doesn't just stop things from being deployed. It can also help do some remediation. So if you suddenly decide that you want diagnostic logs for all your key vaults turned on, you can create an Azure policy and it will actually remediate all the key vaults in your subscription and go, I'm going to turn on the audit logs. And that happens. And again, if someone's missed something in documentation or they've missed an email saying we all have to turn on diagnostic logs, you know, Azure policy does all of that for you. So, and it's got this another pretty dashboard so you can show auditors when they come in on site, look, we are actually complying with these set standards and here's our documentation live in real time that we're actually doing that. So I love that. I love that tool. I don't get to use it as much as I love. I love talking about it.
Yeah, no, it's a really good one. So usually we start the conversation with kind of user level controls, because you have to get people into the portal or give them access to the resource manager APIs so they can create things. So even before they can create a VM, they need to be a user who is granted access to do that. So generally, we look at users as kind of a once you're in at the level you're in at, you're there. So for instance, if you make me an owner on a resource group in Azure, well, I'm an owner for that resource group. My access automatically inherits down, so I can set security, I can create new things, I can do all that kind of stuff. The question then becomes, well, what can Scott create? And the answer is, as a user level of control, I really just have a role and access, right? That's just role-based access control, or IAM, to a thing. So I can create anything. I can create storage accounts all over the world. I can create virtual machines anywhere. Like Sarah said, I can create machines that are little itty-bitty basic things all the way up to a Godzilla series. Or I could go, hey, I want to do SAP HANA and have it running on this M series thing, and it's going to cost thousands and thousands of dollars, pounds, you know, whatever currency we want to put it in, it's going to run away from you. So what we do is then we take RBAC and we say, okay, that doesn't do enough. So let's layer policy in and have platform level controls. So we're going to a control on the Azure kind of API plane that is going to allow you or deny you from doing certain things regardless of who you are. So even if I'm an owner, if that policy has been implemented that says you can only create D2S V3s in this resource group, that's awesome. You know, there's t-shirt sizing for those VMs. That's all I can create there. If I try and create something else, the API surface won't let me, even if I'm a deity or a super admin or things like that, because regardless of who I am, regardless of the user, we all need to adhere to the policy that's put in place in the environment. And then the other thing that I like to call out for everybody, and I'm sure you probably run into this with your customer, Sarah, is, you know, we start talking about policy and they go, oh, great, it's this really rich deny mechanism. And it's not just a deny mechanism, it's really an augmentation and having the platform drive certain controls for you. So for instance, you know, we look at tagging as a cost control. Let's go ahead and have a cost center or a GL code, something like that associated with every single resource. Well, there's actually policy that you can say automatically have it append a tag. So, you know, there's an enforce or there's an append. So enforce, it would block it if the tag wasn't there. But what if I just want to have a default tag that goes on everything? Cool. Let's go ahead and implement that via policy. And then they're even getting a little bit richer. So now there's capabilities to potentially reach into your virtual machines and not just audit your Azure environment, but maybe have audit controls for software that's installed on a VM. So reach in through the guest agents on the hypervisor and, you know, let's make sure my endpoint protection is installed on everything. And then, like Sarah mentioned, have access to kind of that rich dashboard to go in and say what's compliant and what's not compliant within my environment. So you get these kind of multiple lenses there of user controls and platform controls, and you can really drive some interesting functionality within the environment once it's been properly configured.
Yeah, that's great. And I think the fact that they've actually made it free is great because it makes it more accessible for people. They don't have to think about the costs and they can just create policies to their heart's content, as long as they don't lock it down too much, because I've seen that happen.
you can let it run away from you. And like anything else, it's got multiple tiers. There's, you know, a free tier and there's a paid tier to Azure policy, depending on some of that reporting that you might want to get back out the other side for compliance drift within the environment. It's super easy to onboard to. At the end of the day, it's kind of declarations of settings that you're going to make in the environment. So we're talking about, you know, maybe modeling things with JSON, but there's tons and tons and tons of built-in policies where you can just go in and have access to those out of the box. It's about as next of an experience to kind of go in and start putting sanity checks in place within your environment in a super quick and super easy way. And then you can continue to lock that down a little bit further with maybe something like role-based access control. So there's dedicated roles for policies, things like that, to make sure that only the right people have access to go in there and make changes and get the environment into the state that it needs to be in.
Got it. Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. So people that are just getting started with policies, and I legitimately didn't know the answer to this, is there a way to like start putting policies in place and almost test a policy? So if I'm going to go do this policy, what's going to happen? Or what effects might this have? Or almost do reporting off of a policy without actually enforcing it? Just because, like you said, you want to be careful with some of these policies that you don't lock it down too much. Is there a method to kind of test out policies before you actually apply them as well?
There is a kind of what if policy. So you can say, I would like this, but it doesn't actually stop anybody from doing anything, or it doesn't remediate it. But it just gives you a wee flag in your dashboards that says, actually, this resource doesn't look compliant. So you can create, and I want to say non-malicious policies, so you can then manually look into that resource. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense. So you can kind of almost that, like you said, the what if, let's see what this does before I actually go enforce something.
Yeah, and you can scope policies as well down to resource level. So you can have them at subscription level or resource level, resource group level, sorry. So again, if you wanted to play with it, you could assign it to your resource group and just play with policies there and try to create things and do stuff and see how it did as well. So there's that granularity as well, depending on your appetite for testing or what your needs are.
All right. Sounds
good. Yeah, it's pretty rich. So when you think about policy effects, it might be, you know, in the case of that resource group and a tag or a resource, it might be an append action. So go ahead and add it for me if it's not there. There's also audit if it doesn't exist. You can do straight denies. You can even do like deploy if not exists kinds of things. So it's a, if this, then that part is, do you deny, do you append, do you audit, whatever it happens to be along the way.
Sounds good. So any other handy tools that you have, Sarah, any last tool you want to mention? We're running a little short on time, but we'll let you fill in any other tools or any other tips you might have around the governance.
So the other one to probably call out is Azure Blueprints, and that's a new one. And that kind of comes along with management groups. I think Azure Blueprints is still in preview, so a lot of people are...
It is.
Yeah, so they're a bit hesitant about using preview services. But I think this is probably one in the preview pane that you can actually use. And it helps you organize your kind of organizational policies, if you want to call that. The terminology starts to get a little lost, but what you can do when you have massive organizations who have lots of different departments or lots of different branches doing different things in Azure, you can create a blueprint that has some of your corporate standards in, and it applies all the way down. It's probably really hard to talk about on a podcast. I usually use slides to try and do this because it's one of those great ones that actually... You need a slide behind you. But if you think of like a hierarchy, blueprints kind of can take what your corporate standards are and cascade them down the way. So again, if for compliance reasons your whole organization can only ever deploy into the UK data centers, you can apply that blueprint and have that cascade down to every subscription that you create up, existing subscriptions or new subscriptions. And that's only just touching where blueprints can help you. But yeah, that's another one to have a look at, especially if you are large organizations, because you can quickly get away from you. I've got a few customers who have created quite a few subscriptions and lost control of them because some guy has owner access to this subscription so he can see in it. Then he only has read access on another subscription, and then on another subscription he has no access at all. So, you know, you can apply through blueprints the RBAC models that you want for everybody. So you might want all your IT to always have read access to every subscription that you ever create. And blueprints can help you do all of that management. And I don't like this phrase, but from that one single pane of glass. But yeah, that's another one to look at and incorporate that with Azure Policy and Azure Advisor and RBAC and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we're talking about lifting kind of some of these controls. So, you know, Sarah mentioned scope of a subscription, a resource group, resource, things like that for applying something like policy. Well, what if we could lift scope above your subscription and really take it up to a tenant level? So specifically your Azure Active Directory tenant, where we can have one AD tenant that's associated with multiple subscriptions, and then be able to push all these different things down. So it works okay when you think about it at you know, one subscription, maybe two subscriptions, and hand jamming the same things. What do you do when you have 15 or 100 subscriptions or even more than that to go ahead and do all these role assignments, policy assignments, maybe even create common resources like having, you know, your core network stood up or VNet peers or things like that tied together? And that's really where Blueprint shines, right? We want to lift all that functionality up a layer out of the subscription and then let you model existing subscriptions and potentially even brand new ones that come on board to have them automatically configured for you. So as your maturity increases, you know, you get these really rich operational controls to go ahead and just push functionality out to your environments automatically.
Got it. So those role assignments, the security, the policies, resource groups, all of that's within a subscription. Blueprints is up spanning multiple subscriptions to make sure those, the security, the policy, resource groups, all of that can be set the same way then across every subscription your organization has.
Yeah. So you go beyond thinking about a subscription. Now think about an estate. You know, you don't own one house, you own a whole subdivision. How are you going to manage that and keep it running? And that's where Blueprints comes in.
Got it.
It can totally help to avoid that shadow IT that can creep in a cloud strategy. So yeah, it's a great one for that as well.
All right. Very cool. Well, thanks, Sarah. Thanks for joining us. To wrap up, if people want to find out more about you, do you have blog, Twitter? Where can people go get in touch with you if they want to chat with you more, have questions, follow you?
So I'm on Twitter as TechieLass, and my blog is also techielass.com. So yeah, if anybody wants to get in touch, you can grab me there.
All right, perfect. And we'll put all of those in the show notes as well. So if you want to go grab those links out of the show notes, if you're listening, go grab those as well.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you. Not a problem. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks again for coming on. Thanks, Scott. We will talk to you guys later.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.